You're listening to the New Old Heads podcast, shot live every Tuesday at twitch.tv/newoldheads and released every Thursday at noon via bringingdowntheband.com. The show is brought to you by Coleman Dental, Printfinity, Indie CD and Vinyl. Support the show directly by becoming a member at patreon.com/newoldheads.
You're now tuned in to the New Old Heads podcast. I am Major 7. The crew is in the building. Starting off with my man, Jay Moore. How are you, sir?
Doing well. You know, excited about all the work I have coming up.
Okay, get that bag.
But at the same time, I'm also excited that in a month or so, I'm going to take a short little trip to New York City.
My man.
For the first time, it's crazy. I've made it, this is advanced age.
Yeah.
And haven't made my pilgrimage to the Mecca and the beginning of hip hop. But I'm excited to go.
Take a look at those price points and prices when you get out there and let me know what you think.
Oh, I know it's going to be, you know. Yeah.
I'm talking about the housing market?
No, I'm talking about anywhere.
No, I know to have.
I'm talking about anywhere.
Have my, you know, my paper together.
Yeah, make sure you're going to spend some money. I don't care if you walk into a pizza shop. You're going to spend some bread.
You know, but I'm going to have, you know, my authentic New York experience that I can't have.
So, you going to get on a plane with some Tims?
I might.
Hey.
I might. Go. Why not?
Why not? Why not?
Go all out.
Oh man, longevity. How are you, buddy?
Doing all right, man.
Yeah?
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. It's good to see you as always.
Yeah, you too.
Yep.
Thanks.
Oh man, DJ J Dill. What's happening, man?
Salutation.
Everything good, your way?
Yes, sir.
Yeah? Got you some snacks? Everything good? Man.
Good old raisins, chocolate colored
ones, you know. Oh man. Everybody's happy.
It's a good time.
I want to start off with we just mentioned Nelly. Shout out to the homeboy Nelly. Well, he's not the homeboy for the show, but still a legend.
True, he is.
Yeah, shout out to him. Okay. Midwest.
Yeah, Midwest. Got a rep for the Midwest. He made a very interesting comment about his era of hip hop, his era of music. And he says, based off the artists that came out around that time, it was the hardest era to release music. So there's an audio clip that we can play and video, but I want you guys to hear what he said, and then maybe we can discuss and see what you guys think, because I actually think he has a good point.
Nelly, coming from the Lou, did you ever have chip on your shoulder? Because everything was L.A., New York. God, we always talk about that with the Midwest, man. Like,
I'm right.
Yeah?
I'm right. But you got to understand, my era of music was the toughest era in hip-hop ever. When I put out songs, I had to go against DMX,
Eminem,
Jay-Z, Eminem, Lil Wayne, 50 Cent, Luda.
Nah,
yeah.
All of us are fighting for one spot.
So, Mr. St. Louis, our resident St. Louis native.
While I have on a Boston Bruins jersey.
They still love you at the crib, bro. Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Does he have a point?
Absolutely right.
Okay.
He's absolutely right, because this is also the era when I had a peek behind the curtain, because I was in commercial radio at that time.
Right.
As far as what the commercial impact, and this was the most competitive time in commercial rap music ever, because it wasn't like, oh, you could be the top rapper. No, you could be the top artist in all categories. You know, Ludacris was not going for the top, you know, number one on the rap charts or the R&B charts. He was going for the number one on the pop charts. Same thing with Eminem. Same thing with Nelly. Same thing with Jay-Z. Same thing with the name he left out, who was moving units, Ja Rule, and then 50.
Oh, I forgot about Ja Rule.
Exactly. You got to understand, at one point, Ja Rule was moving.
Jay-Z, the formula.
At one point in the Def Jam building, and people want to hear this, it was DMX, it was Ja Rule, and then it was Jay-Z as far as people who were moving units.
That is
very true.
You know,
it's a fact.
You can say M. Pimp Juice and us, but it was like, there's people standing right next to you in your building who are outselling you.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jay-Z, though. I'm just letting you know, but this is what it was.
That's right.
Now, am I talking about artistically? Maybe not. I think that's where a lot of people get the game, and they want to refute what he said. But when you're talking about, you might see the Billboard Top 200, and it might be four or five rap albums in that top 200. It might be six of the 10 songs on the singles chart. You know, we weren't at that point. Hip hop was not relegated to just its own chart. They were kicking so much ass across the board that, you know, they probably changed some things as far as an algorithm wasn't a thing then. It was about SoundScan.
Yeah. True.
This is when people had to go to the store and get the records and buy the singles. So And this is when Nelly sold 10 and his second album sold like 6. DMX was doing like 5. Eminem was doing 8 and 9. Jay-Z was doing 5. This is when Ludacris, somebody from the South. This is when Outkast should have been, he should have mentioned them as
he
well.
He didn't even mention them.
You know, this is when Ja Rule was doing 3, 4, and 5. You know, so as far as the commercial viability of hip hop records, this was the most competitive time.
It was, in a sense, too, because
during this time, this is when Nelly was selling more records than anybody, except for maybe Eminem. And at one point, I would say he was right there with Eminem.
Yeah, definitely.
But wasn't the market share bigger then, though?
The market share of what?
Like, weren't just more people buying music back
more
then?
More people were buying music, but what I was going to add to this is the money. They had people or artists that were actually putting out good product, too, though. So I can't just be a rapper and compete with these dudes and be putting out weak product that's going to compete with them, that's going to make it to this crossover chart on both MTV and BET if my stuff isn't good.
Because
you had a lot of artists out then, too. Those weren't the only artists out. It was saturated then as well, but you had this core of artists that were just dropping stuff that was undeniably good. Whether you liked the pop sound of it or not, it was good music at the end of the day.
But these artists that I mentioned when we were talking about how competitive it was, they were putting a foot not only to, you know, they were beating rock music. They were beating the Christina Aguilera.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they were actually putting out good music that was competing with
their
stuff.
Their numbers were right there with, this is when hip hop was just beating everybody's ass. You know, country music didn't have no play.
But this was, again, this was right before the internet really took off with bootlegging and everything.
Or actually, it was during the same era.
It was.
Essentially.
It was. Because
if we're talking about when bootlegging started.
99.
Yeah, but it really wasn't crazy like that for a while.
I don't know, man.
There was a ramp up with bootlegging.
No, I remember because I got Jay-Z's Volume 3 2 weeks early because it came out in, for whatever reason, United Kingdom, and it had Is That Your Bitch and Anything on it.
And it was low quality. It was available to you.
And what
even
year?
Like that
99.
The DJ Clue mixtapes were getting leaked early too.
I don't care what you say. Bootlegging music was not at its peak in 1999.
This is when Napster hit. It was very active.
But I'm saying it was not at its peak in 1999.
I don't know. I could walk into a barbershop and buy any CD that I wanted.
I'm with Lone on this. I think there was a ramp up with it.
It was
a ramp up, but I'm saying at this point in time, it may not have been at its peak where somebody's just opened up a suitcase full of stuff like it evolved into. But I could walk into a gas station, a barbershop at any point in time and cop whatever was available.
Like, I remember when the recession in music really hit. It was around 06, 07, because I was running a record pool and all of a sudden I would get the SoundScan numbers every week. Mm-hmm. And I remember the one that really stood out to me where I just know, oh, this is going to do crazy. And it was like Busta Rhymes, The Big Bang. It was the one album he did on Aftermath.
Very good album.
And I looked at those first week numbers. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yep.
For it to be the number one album and come out and only do this.
Mm-hmm. I think too, like, we are all music heads.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing we were all burning CDs, and we knew a lot of people that were burning CDs in high school.
Yeah.
And you're a little older than me, so I'm guessing that was like early years college for you.
I mean,
99 was what?
99, yeah, I was, yeah.
Yeah, that's college for me.
It was college-ish. I was when I started working in radio.
I was a sophomore in high school in 99.
Mm-hmm.
And I did start burning a lot of CDs around there, but it really took off like in like 2000, 2001, 2002. I would think that it would be like the peak of where like it became and started crossover into being like regular people were doing that too. Like not even music heads, like everybody was using these Napsters and all the other variety of different things that you could bootleg off of.
Look, I remember when Napster, and I don't know if you guys remember iDrive accounts. That's how I got DMX's second album. Mm-hmm. And it was a situation, you know, of course I had to, it took me like 7 or 8 hours to download it because there was no, you know, I was on dial up at that time. But I tell you what I stopped doing about 99, 2000 was buying singles.
Yeah. Because for a minute they were dropping the like maxi singles that had extra plays on it and stuff like that.
They might have had a remix.
But even think about when Tupac died and all of those Machiavellis were coming out.
Yep.
Those weren't the only things getting bootlegged then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the quality of a bootleg, it went up tremendously because I'm able to rip these quality MP3s now versus getting this Lucy essentially, mm-hmm. that's low quality, but I'm still gonna bump it because nobody has it.
Now, mind you, let's talk about when CD burners, because remember when CD burners first hit, a 1X CD burner might have cost you $700-$800.
Yeah,
but then it got started getting faster. Gotcha. And like, mm-hmm. a CD burner, you might have been able to get a 12X CD burner. I think right. that's the first one I had in 2002, 2003 for a couple hundred dollars
yeah.
as opposed to drop. And then CD rewritables. The technology as far as bootlegging music got so much better so yes. fast.
Yeah, true.
Because like, I remember you buying by a whole spindle of CDs.
Mm-hmm. Memorex CDs,
yeah.
50 for $50.
Yeah.
And then you'd be able to get a rebate or something on it. And then he'd send you a $25 check. Look, trust me, I know the games and the tricks.
Mm-hmm. One of my best friends had a CD book with all burnt CDs mm-hmm. and all bootleg fake covers of the albums.
Mm-hmm.
And that was normal to me.
Like, it was legit.
And it wasn't that I was surprised. I just started flipping through the book to see what I wanted to listen to.
Yeah, let me get number 8, 5, 7, 6.
Look, this is how you know like that first 50 Cent wave was super real, because he sold 10 million records when CD burners were cheap and mm-hmm. internet started to get fast. And people still bought the CD. Same thing with Usher with Confessions.
Yeah.
Like, there was no reason. You didn't have to buy Confessions.
Nah, you did.
But they scanned more than 10 million of those joints.
Yeah.
So most of those numbers, when he got that diamond plaque, he got that diamond plaque when people had CD burners. Like, I contend this, and I'm serious, it might have been Thriller if there was no internet and no CD burners.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
But just back to the point, yes, I think that was on a commercial level, that was the most competitive time.
I don't think I can think of anything.
Because everyone we're talking about, whether you want to give them their props or that, whether it was your thing, what they did, all those people are legends in some sort of way. And they're still, and they're able to move off their legendary status right now.
He definitely was in good company, because everybody that he mentioned can still tour right now and do the damn thing.
Yeah.
Even with, obviously, including Outkast. Eve was big back then, too.
Look, there are people who are able to make moves and sold a couple million records with just crumbs off the table.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that might have accidentally, you could accidentally sell 500,000 records back
then. Yeah, on the humbug, yes. I remember a couple of the Outkast wannabe groups was moving units. Remember the Pimp and the Player?
Oh, they had a song called Hit the Flow.
Yeah, Dirty.
What was the other group? So Sick of Being Lonely.
That was Field Mob.
Field Mob.
I actually like Field Mob.
Yeah, Field Mob I remember getting that song, and it took about 3 hours to get that song. Yeah. And then who's the other group?
Look, there was actually a group called Jim Crow. Do y'all remember that?
Yeah, I remember Jim Crow. The ones that was with Lil Jon and them.
Eastside Boys.
No, not Eastside Boys. Presidential.
Youngbloods. Yo, Youngbloods was big for them. Yeah, they had a movement.
If y'all think about it, those were actually good albums. Like, if you go back and listen to those albums, they were good. They just weren't as good as their predecessors.
Yeah, you know.
It's not the same. And I hate to be the dude that sounds like the old head that's what we do here. Everything off of what we came up off of. Because the stuff that we didn't necessarily like a whole lot is still better than a lot of the stuff that's coming out right now.
Yeah, but the bar is super low, right? I mean,
exactly.
Stuff's coming out now is like, I expect from that type of level, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can agree. I can agree to the competition to a degree, but I still think there's.
Were they trying harder back then?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say they were trying harder.
I would say they were trying harder. I just feel like, too, like the generation right after that Nelly competitive era was pretty competitive, too, but it was just like, I feel like the internet just had a huge impact on a lot of that stuff. And I think, too, like around that time period, if we're talking specifically sales numbers, too, like there was still a little bit of a fear of getting caught for burning stuff.
Oh, yeah. They was running up in record stores. That was the mixtape situation, too, where they were locking people up.
That was more afterwards, though.
It was kind of the same era.
Dramas was what, 2005?
Yeah, Dramas was
about the same time.
But I'm talking about like,
because when they raided the record stores up here.
Yeah.
That's when I got the calls like, yo, get your mixtapes out of here.
Yeah, Rockin' Billy's and what's my guy's tape store? He was actually in the documentary.
I do remember that Mellow Mix was in that documentary.
Was he?
Yeah. Shout out to him. Norman Reed. That's what he does as an attorney. That's who he is. But as a DJ, I know him as DJ Mellow Mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there were like, I mean, for all of us that were alive during that, there were different like.
Barry's music. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
There were different like it was just like, even though it was within like a 5-year period of time, it was just like, I don't know. It seemed like a very long period of time too. Cause I remember most of the stuff that I was bootlegging was mostly like super underground stuff. It wasn't like popular stuff. It was because because it was harder to find some of that super underground stuff.
But I remember,
and that's what I actually would go to. It's funny he says that. I would go to Lone for specifically what he just said, because I knew Lone had found something that I either hadn't heard or artists that I did what I call a Lone artist.
Right.
Like back then, he was.
But those were harder to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those were like the mainstream people. It was easy to burn those.
But what I'm saying is, like, at the same time, like, I would buy albums from, like, I have, like, in my, I literally just found my CD booklet from back then.
Yeah.
I have burned albums from, like, all these kind of obscure artists, but the real CDs that I have in my booklets are all mainstream artists because they were easy for me to find.
Right,
so, like, you know, it's like one of those things. I don't know. I feel like I would have to put a little bit more thought into this to really 100% say that this was like the most competitive era.
Now, if you want to say the most competitive, almost artistic era, we got to go back to when I was in high school, when Tribe, Biggie, Wu-Tang, Death Row, Black Moon, Outkast. That was when it was like, whoa. But this is also a time where before there was actual hip hop radio. This is before there was a real hip hop media. There was no internet to disseminate a lot of this information.
It's also before people start making money.
This is when, you know, hip hop was still taking a back seat, if you will, to the R&B artist. Like the era we're talking about, honestly, the R&B artists, I mean, the hip hop artists were driving. R&B was in the back.
Was that felt like
because
it was
that was that was kind of the neo soul era. Hip hop took over.
Yeah, but
the neo soul era was kind of the underground of the R&B world.
But this era I talked about when I said Outkast, Death Row, Bad Boy. You still understand? This is when Tony Braxton was selling 8 million. Boys to Men was selling 12. You know, like
absolutely,
it was a different time. So like, I mean
that 3 million weren't playing those songs on the radio at the time. So it was harder for them to sell.
So the 3 million. Snoop did, or 4 or 5 million even, and then the 2 million that Outkast did, and the million that tried. That's cute, but it compared to what LaFace just did, with their artists,
LaFace was killing them.
You know,
LaFace was killing.
They was killing left and right because I mean they had R&B and hip hop, at the same time.
Yeah,
but
what Tony, Tony Braxton did and TLC did, don't get me wrong, that was great. But
TLC didn't make no money though.
Yeah, I mean that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
But TLC does 11 or 12. Tony Braxton does 8. That Outkast, we're glad it did too.
Yeah, that's true.
We're glad Goody Mob did 1.
But that's the thing about that time period was people were gunning for attention and recognition. So they weren't trying to just put out lackluster stuff. That's why everybody from that hip hop era sounded so good, because now they weren't making as much money as they're making now, of course, but they started to see more so of the fruits of their labor than their predecessors did. Only people that seen big money before then were like Run DMC and Houdini, Fat Boys even, because they were able to tour overseas and things like that.
Right.
By the time they came out, the rap game had changed to a situation to where they were getting money too, because of all the TV shows and things of that nature that were publicizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Nelly got my vote. That's a lot of star power, pop power for one genre to deal with. And the fact that he did 10 amongst all those peers, it actually speaks volume to him. Yeah,
he did volumes 10 and him. None of it is from streaming. It's from going to the record store.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Pimp Juice.
Now they don't even, like we talked about last week, now we've been conditioned to where we don't even buy the music.
Yeah. It's crazy because even now, thinking back on it, Lone said it wasn't good. There's some stuff that came out at the time that I really wasn't rocking with like that, though.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, they were putting together albums that were doing work and that sounded good sonically, and they were getting more than one single off that were successful.
You had to do that.
Yeah.
If you only had one record on your album, you were getting lost in the sea. You had to have 4 or 5. You had to have a whole album cycle ready to go.
You could not eat off of one song. An old girl that sings the water song. What's her name?
Tyler.
Yeah, she's finding out right now that she cannot tour. But she had to cancel her tour because she's not selling any tickets.
Oh, really?
For people to come see that one song. You know?
No, you are an opening act still if you got but one song. Like, don't get me wrong. I love that record. She is gorgeous, but it ain't enough for me to buy no ticket.
Well, just be an opening act and just try out some new material.
You need to be a package deal for me to get out of my... To leave. Look, I don't even go to the movies.
She
needs
to try and get on that Chris Brown tour or something. I'm just saying.
I mean, you're not wrong.
All right, man. Well, shout out to Nelly. And
yep.
You did your thing, brother. You definitely took
advantage.
He did what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Hey, man, let's go to this next topic. Talk about the brother Akon. Mm-hmm. And there's a clip of him talking about about working while chasing your dreams as a creative. So we can run that. And I want to see what you guys think about that, because I actually think he made some very good points. And I don't think people talk about this enough, especially in a, you know, instant gratification era. I don't think this gets brought up a lot.
Need money. And how are you going to make money if you're doing and focusing 100% of your craft? This is the thing about artists. They feel like once they become artists, they don't need a job. You got to have a job. Just get a part-time job to pay your basic bills, phone bill, rent. It's okay to work. We all got to do it. Nobody ain't going to laugh at you if you flipping burgers. I was stocking groceries at Kroger's before I made it when I got out. I wasn't getting back to the streets. You need money.
Yeah. Shout out to him saying Kroger's.
Yeah. Kroger's with an S. That's a Midwest
thing. Yes. Is he from the Midwest?
He lived in St. Louis for a minute.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's where he must have worked at Kroger's.
No, we had no... He wasn't there when we had Kroger's. Okay. We had Kroger in St. Louis for a minute, but it was a long time ago.
All right.
But
I thought Kroger was definitely just like Indianapolis, Ohio.
I thought it was Midwest too.
No, they
were Payless. Payless was an Indiana thing.
Was it?
Yeah.
No, we had Payless.
Yeah, I didn't have... What's Payless look like?
Payless Describe shopping it. Stores?
Oh, I thought
grocery store?
I thought you were talking about Payless shoes.
Nah, no, I was about to say, y'all didn't have Payless.
Payless grocery stores were bought by Kroger, because I knew when I went to school.
That must have been an Anderson thing, because we didn't have Payless.
There were only so many of them. I was friends with one of the family that owned them. So, gotcha. Yeah.
There's still one there, too. Lone, you've been a creative for a while, buddy. Since I've almost, yeah, probably since I've known you, close to the duration of our friendship. What you think about what he said?
Well...
I love that. Well,
we are not built as a society, even though art in general is something that we all enjoy. It's almost, you can make the argument that art is something that makes life worth it in all the different ways. You could say the art of watching film or enjoying music to some degree, or the art of recreational activities or whatever that is.
Right.
My response to Akon is, yeah, in capitalism, you have to work, because there's nothing set up for artists to actually be...
Just be free to create about your day.
It's not a thing. Like, we don't put value on people that bring value to our lives.
Okay.
You know Until I mean? They do something that society deems as valuable.
Till it becomes commercially viable for somebody to capitalize off of it. It's just kind of what it is. So I have to say that caveat because I think it's important, but there is nothing wrong with working and while you're pursuing something, because if you are working while you're pursuing something, it just means that you understand the game that you're in.
Good point.
And, you know, I have a unique lifestyle to a lot of people being able to teach in the field that I do and to do this stuff in the field and do a bunch of creative endeavor in my field, but not a lot of people are like me. Not a lot of people have the privilege to do the things that I do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, granted, at the same time, when I was younger and I was coming up, I thought that there was one way that I could be a successful person in the music world, and that was just getting signed to a label or touring and doing that stuff. And then
literally was the thought.
That's,
we had those conversations back then.
That was the only thing. We didn't see it as any other possibility. Now fast forward, and you know, I look, my life in the last 15 years has been, yes, I've put out a lot of music, I've released a lot of music, I've worked with a lot of artists, I've never stopped being a full-time artist.
Right.
It's switched over from strictly hip-hop to mostly instrumental related stuff, obviously, because I don't really rap anymore. The last rap I wrote was 3 years ago, and the last album I did was in 2018. 17. Yeah, I know, right?
Wow. Hopefully that changes.
Yeah, maybe. You know, but at the same time, like, I started teaching music production in 2017. You know, we started this podcast in 2018. We were doing Bringing Down the Band in 2009.
Yeah.
And that's crossed over into the creative world. And that's, you know, showcasing music. I started a record label where I don't really do a lot with it, but it's enough to push, you know, a little bit. So like from all these different avenues that I do, I'm able to sustain and continually grow and build up, you know. And shoot, man, I like for a big record label, they got like millions and millions of followers on YouTube. I'm not going to say their name, but it's like, I work with a creative design firm from one of my homies where I do project management with their creative design team to create all the short teaser videos and stuff that you do. So like,
see, the difference
it's in that realm.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm still able to be in that realm. But even though I'm in this position to where like I can do all these things and I intentionally set my life up this way.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with having a job where you're doing something over here and you're making money, because even though this was my path and this is the path that I needed to take, this is not the path for a lot of people, because I did not start off on this path making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you know, if you've got kids or you've got like a lot of financial responsibilities out there, or you got crazy student loans, or you got crazy credit card bills,
this
or you
might
got,
not be your route.
It may not be for you. But for me, I knew that this is what I needed to do for me. So I set my life up in this particular manner and I could do it. But there's nothing wrong with just working.
Yeah.
You know, true. Like I did that early on, you know, for a very long time. So yeah. Look, I don't know. Man, that's what I would say.
It's unrealistic though for a lot of these artists to think that just because I'm an artist, I'm not supposed to do anything but my art.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And it kind of affects your art in a way, because you can't really get it out how you want to.
Yep.
Because you're stressed out about what you're going to do next, or you become this super finesser that meets women and flips her tax money and doesn't really flip the tax
money.
It's
that season.
But right. You end up, you know what I'm saying, laid up with them, and then that's a whole nother situation. I mean, this is real life stuff out here, man. People go through this merry-go-round for years and years and years and think that it's okay just because you're saying that you're an artist or you're a rapper. A lot of people become complacent with being that because they don't want to do anything else but that. And essentially, some of them just aren't good enough to do that. Like, your situation is unique because you're actually making money from these things.
Right.
A lot of people are waiting for a show or somebody to put them on a bill in order for them to just get a couple $100s in order to kind of skate by, get a pack of cigarettes, two for four or whatever they're going to do, or kick a little money on Shorty's bills that you're staying with that has a child. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? This is just unrealistic and irresponsible. And I feel like in today's day and time, there are way too many avenues for you to make money to sit back and be complacent and say, I'm just an artist and this is the only thing I'm going to do to get my money.
But I will also say, I will argue with that point. And I will say, too, it's also because society does devalue artistry.
This is true.
Like I had just had a conversation with Andy from Indie City and Vinyl, Shotstar, one of our partners.
Yes, what's up?
And he was talking about Canadian artists. And I think, I don't remember exactly, but he was talking, I think it was about Canadian artists that he was booking. The government is involved in certain things in different places to where like they will pay artists to do stuff.
Yeah.
So like they're putting out records or they're touring different places. Like,
yeah, they got healthcare.
It's something. Well, it's that too, but it's something, but it's like built into like, all right, cool. We see it sometimes here with like grants. Certain artists will get grants to do stuff, but it's a lot more prevalent in other areas where they put artistry ahead
because they want to add to the culture.
For sure. And so like, we're just so far behind here that when we look at artists and we see them struggling out here to do these things, it's like, we just do not value artistry here. We just want to commodify it. We just want to use it for our time, for everything that we're doing. And, you know, so those things are true. Everything that you're saying is true, Terry. But at the same time, it's like, I wish the conversation was more so like, how do we make it more equitable for those people around us?
Yeah, or
there's still personal responsibility involved in all these things. But
100%.
But it's like we're putting the onus on the person
a
little bit too much.
That's true. I think the problem here is we value the artistry. We don't value the time, energy, and effort that's put towards making it to a point where your artistry is readily available and welcome. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Because like we applaud the people that are doing their thing, but we're not helping them or pulling them up by their bootstraps, so to speak, because we don't like the struggle. We don't like that part of the story. We like the part where
we don't want to see how the sausage
overcame.
Is made.
Yeah, you've overcame, and this is your story now, and you've done all of these great things from your struggle. But we don't care about the struggle part. We only care about the struggle part when it's time to write your biography or make the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
jump in, Jay.
This is the thing, man. I'll speak from personal experience. Like during the day, probably about maybe 3 or 4 days, sometimes 5, we're at a restaurant. And it's been multiple times when people have come up to me and be like, I recognize you from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, oh, I don't try to bring anything that I'm doing outside of what I'm doing at that moment. Right. It's like, oh, I saw you host this show.
Mm-hmm.
You're a Take That Tuesday. I've seen your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that never makes me feel any kind of way because I'm getting to the money.
Right. Yeah.
You shouldn't.
Right. Shouldn't at all. You know. Shouldn't bother you at all.
And so like, there are some people who are like, well, you know, I can't be working in a restaurant and cleaning people's tables while I'm supposed to be, you know, an artist and I'm the star or whatever. Like, you have to humble yourself until whatever you're doing as an artist pays all of your bills. You have to keep it real. I hate saying keep it real because I don't mean nothing anymore, but you do have to humble yourself and say, well, this is what I'm doing now to get this money, because like, there's no place for me to host a show at 11:30 in the morning.
No. Right.
So I got to go out here and take orders and bust tables.
Yeah. Ain't nothing wrong.
You know?
With that.
And the thing is like, you know, if you know what I know, you can really get to the money by working in a restaurant.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm thinking, wait a minute, I was working in corporate America and I was making the same thing. Like, it almost makes you mad.
True.
But at the same time, like, I can just speak from personal experience. It's like, look, if I was one of those people that felt some kind of way, it's like, I'm Jay Moore, I'm the host of this, that, and the third, and I did this, and then I'm blocking my other blessings and my ability to do things and live life because I think I'm too good to just go out and get a job because someone might recognize me. Like, it makes me think about that episode of Martin after he lost his job and he goes down to the unemployment.
With Myra.
Yeah. And he's like, somebody might recognize me. You know, I can't take this job.
Yeah.
You know, that's when he ran into Angry Man. He told him to sit his ass down. Man, sit your ass down.
Nah, for real.
But I think that's where some artists, the mentality comes from, because they feel like, well, they have to see me in that light. They can't see me in the light. And I'm in here asking you, you know, what, you know, can I get you something to drink while you're looking at your menu?
But you know, some people are wired to, they'd rather be what you're saying, like be the person that's recognized and then sit in the crib with your power turned off or something.
Pride.
But they
look,
feel
too,
I'm still,
that.
I'm still, the, I'm still the star. Like, I'm still the star. But when I go home, the refrigerator is empty and I got to figure out what bills I'm going to pay this month.
There's
people that will live like that for the sake of their ego.
There is a moment I went through that where I'm like, these people can't see me working at Amazon. Somebody might recognize me up. I had that mentality for a quick minute. I was like, no, I better get this. I better get to this money while it's here.
I got responsibility, sir.
You know, like, you know, me being Jay Moore only pays so many bills.
Exactly.
Hey, me being
out there and,
my government name, full on, which I'm not going to reveal here, that pays the rest of the bills. So
that's
Jay
real,
Moore
bro.
And my full government name got to work together to make this thing happen.
Facts.
But at the same time, not that I disagree. I just think this is a very nuanced conversation.
It ties into what we talked about last week a little bit.
I don't even remember what we talked about last week. but it probably does. But I think, imagine somebody like Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
What if Odyssey came out and said that he had a part-time job doing something, like working at a restaurant? How would that make you feel?
It wouldn't make me feel any different.
To me, it would make me feel, why has...
It's somebody who makes good music like
why
that.
Why is somebody who is this successful?
Oh, I see where you're going.
Why can this person that is this successful, why does this person have to spend any amount of time doing anything other than the thing that they should be doing?
I see where you're going.
And to me, like, all right, cool. I can mostly create. I have the time to do that. But if I ask you, Mike, who has a full-time job, do you feel like you have enough time to really, let's say you could literally wake up and you made enough money from making music.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you are in that space?
No.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like you're there at all.
I tell you, in the sense of having enough time to be able to. No, I don't. And as a creative, what the, you kind of, I think you alluded to this a little bit when you were talking earlier. As a creative, that can be frustrating because there are tiers of, there's tiers in your talent. Time enables you to reach certain tiers that you may not reach if you're multitasking. Right.
For sure.
Because if you have more time to hone your craft, obviously you might tap into two or three more chambers that you never thought you could get into because you have the time.
Yeah.
But that goes back to, you know, the conversation about balancing and figuring out what's most important, because, yeah, I'd love to have the time, but it's going to be an eviction notice. So you just have to make certain choices as a creative. And like you said, we've all talked, alluded to it about there not necessarily being somewhat of a value or whatever as it relates to artists. But no, I would love to be able to just wake up every day and be like, okay, I'm going to allot this amount of time to working on something different. It's like basketball. I'm going to work on my left hand today, right? I'm just going to make 10 beats a day that are all piano beats, quote unquote, or whatever. Right. Like, that would be very refreshing. But
that's why youth is so important. And that's why people are always encouraging people that are young to essentially hone in on what they want to do.
Yep.
And take advantage of this time freedom that you have right now. Because once you get to a certain age, that time freedom just doesn't exist.
Once life starts lifing.
First kid comes up, once that wife pops up, you know, you gotta, your priorities have to change as far as how you use your 24 hours.
But imagine in the same sense to where like there was something set up to where like an artist, you know, all you have to do is prove that, all right, cool, you're putting out a project. All right, cool, you're putting out the project and you're working with this other artist and it's reaching this many people and you're doing these things. Cool. I'll give you $5,000-$10,000 to do that project, right?
Yep.
And then you can adjust your life around that.
Facts.
But it means that you can actually allocate some time of your personal time to be creative, to put this stuff out into the environment, to the world that the people want.
Facts.
But, you know, instead, you know, it's just late nights.
The rat race, or late nights, early morning. Like, it's just that's it. That's a part of it.
That's what I advocate for. So I 100% agree with everything. But I agree with everything. But it's just like, I want to change the narrative to like put more value on the creatives and the artists. And also like, you know, not just from an individualist standpoint, but also like put pressure on and you know, the institution of the United States. And
yeah, we know what you're running on. That's going to be one of your running points. And
everything.
People are going to say that, oh, he can't do that.
Yeah.
But this other person on the other hand can do everything he said he can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
That's America.
America.
Yep.
Thanks to our partners. Dr. Coleman of Coleman Dental is our go-to dentist. He's a longtime Indianapolis arts and music supporter located right in Broad Ripple. Printfinity is a screen printing shop based in Indianapolis, owned and operated by our own DJ J Diff. Our good friends at Indie CD and Vinyl operate one of the best record stores in North America. Shop new and used in their site or visit them in person. And the best way to support the new old heads is to visit our Patreon and become a member for as little as $3 a month. All details on newoldheads.com.
Welcome back, everyone. All right, man. Let's see. We said we went to
rock. Jazzy Jeff one, right?
Yeah, Jazzy Jeff was the one that shared the link. It was Rashida Tlaib. But no, there's a clip of Rashida Tlaib that's a representative from Detroit, 12th District. And she was talking about trying to change the laws, to pass a law that would actually get artists paid more per stream, if I'm not mistaken. We'll have to play the video and listen. But, you know, we talked about Spotify. We talked about them multiple times as they've gone through certain changes. And the last one I believe we discussed was the 1,000 stream requirement to get paid, I believe was one of the ones we did.
For Spotify.
Yeah, for Spotify.
The ones where they were using actual bots.
Yeah, we talked about that
and
as well.
And since then, I've literally removed all my music from Spotify. So
yeah, I remember you said that. Yeah.
So screw them. But yeah.
Yeah, let's run that clip, Lone, and then we can review and discuss.
All right.
Mr. Speaker, I'm from Motown, where our music has changed the world in so many incredible ways forever. But artists in my district and across our country are struggling to make ends meet in an industry where the money just keeps going to executives and shareholders. It would take more than 800,000 streams per month to make equivalent of $15 an hour. The vast majority of our artists are on platforms like Apple Music, Spotify. And one of the things that, even for them, they never ever get to 800,000 streams in a year. This is a big deal. Streaming now represents 84% of recorded music industry's revenue in the United States. But most of the artists who bring joy to our lives and culture aren't seeing any of it. The Living Wage for Musicians Act, which I introduced through Representative Bowman, would change that by creating a new fund that aims to pay artists at least one penny per stream. The bill would completely reform the music industry, supporting much more diverse set of artists, enabling more recording and touring, and sending a ripple effect throughout local economies by supporting professionals throughout the music industry. I truly encourage my colleagues to learn more about this, co-sponsor the bill, and help change artists' lives forever.
You support a penny per stream? Do you know how great that would be?
I mean, like,
people hear that, they're like, a penny per stream.
They have, like, no idea. Where I'm like, man, start doing the math. Yeah, like, start mathing.
Yeah, like, this is literally kind of what I was just talking about on the previous topic. So, yeah, I'm definitely with something like this.
That's what I was about to ask you.
If it got support from any of the non-progressive representatives, because again, we don't value art. Right. People are probably sitting there just kind of like, that's what all those old people are doing that are, you know, defecating in their pants. So it's just like, it's
poop. Oh, defecating. I like defecating.
I'm just saying, like, it. I mean, we're talking about a Congress who, like,
do you really though?
Don't. I was hoping that passed him.
I was really hoping that passed him.
I was. I didn't want anybody.
Jesus Christ, I didn't want anybody to think about that.
I didn't. I wanted it to get. I know you did. Jay Moore didn't even catch it until he said something. So I was hoping that mug got passed. But
that,
go ahead.
That ad lib was very unnecessary, sir.
I'm usually pretty good with my ad libs, but that one was bad.
Yeah, that was bad.
Sorry, y'all. I don't like defecating.
Wow.
Go ahead, man.
Thanks for telling us what you were talking about, but
go ahead, man.
I actually never mind.
You made me mess up.
I tried to throw it back to him, so he didn't. So I apologize.
But you know who you're throwing it back to, bro. You know he's gonna laugh.
I don't know what I was saying, but yeah, I don't even remember what I was saying.
It was about how you talked about the last topic, so, like, and how it ties in.
Did anybody watch the hearings when they had the TikTok guy on?
Yeah.
And he's from Singapore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the old guy, it was just like, well, are you from China, communist?
Oh, my God.
Are you from the communist China? He's like, no, I'm from Singapore. So, are you a part of the communist China party? It was just like, it was like these people are brain dead, you know? And it's just like, I don't expect any of these people to.
Bunch of Mitches.
Yeah,
I see you.
Sure.
I see you.
Literally.
I see you.
We need more progressive change within our Congress, within our representatives, and we just don't have it. There's no representatives. There's not a significant amount of representation in our government that can ever really constitute real serious change. Even the Democrats, they're
old.
The same. But even beyond being
just
old, they're not progressive. They're all capitalists anyways. Like, everybody in there is a capitalist. So it's like,
Even worse than being capitalist.
That's the other argument. What I'm saying is we don't have any type of representation that wants to challenge the status quo at all. And so, like, this is great that Rashida does this. She also catches a lot of slack for anything that she breaks up.
Yeah. I don't care what it is.
Like, you know, like, even the people that are defending, like, most of our government is on board with the Israel and the Palestine situation.
When you say ceasefire, there are people who are like, that's so controversial.
Oh my God. It's like, okay, yeah, people is, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, anyways. Just,
yeah, okay.
But she's always on the right.
Demonetized.
But she's always on the right side. And, you know, like.
No, I rock with her. I do.
We need more people like her and more representatives like her. So
nobody believes people like that. And we've seen that happen with Bernie.
Yeah.
The people that actually literally call out and tell the truth. And people are always like, well, I mean, they're making a point, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's not going to happen because you won't support it.
I mean, it makes sense, but I don't know if we really want to.
Because people always say, well, that's not realistic. It's the same thing. And once again, let's demonetize.
Who cares?
You know, it's just like when people talk about reparations, like, where are we going to get the money for that? But then I see we got money for so many other things.
I got money.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, when I see all the money we send to Ukraine and then to Israel and then everywhere else.
I'm talking about they got broke off.
But then they're like, oh, I don't know. This seems like that's a lot of money.
Yeah. It's because we don't value anything of that we need to value.
That's the bar alone.
We only value money. We that's only value what is money and what really is going to generate value more.
That because
oh yeah,
are,
we do.
We do, but we don't. Yeah. In a, because I mean, they're promissory notes at the end of the day.
I mean,
okay, they still value. We can talk about that.
Yeah,
we're an oligarchy. Well, or what's the one? Plutocracy.
Hey, hey, we use a big word. SIT words. So somebody's going to get confused. Yeah,
but you know,
but no.
Shout out to Nixon.
Yeah, it's just it really is a thing to where. Like I've made this point before, we have enough money to solve the problems that we need to solve.
Facts.
But if we solved them, what would people argue about? What would the people we send to Washington argue about?
It's almost like
they'll pick out some because you know what's weird. And I literally seen this today. This has, I guess, it does kind of have something to do with this because we're talking about Miss Rashida and. Her going there and trying to get money for artists. And this does go back to the previous conversation we just had. It kind of coincides with it. But anytime somebody says something about weather and how it's changing, people politicize it. What is that about here? Yeah.
I think it's interesting because I think most places in the world are super politicized.
As far as weather, though,
somebody can
literally post a picture that says, this year it was sunny on this particular day.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying.
This year, now it's not. And it's just an observation.
Right.
And somebody chooses to politicize
it. Yeah. He's right.
I think it's just people like to read into the subtleties a lot of times. And there is typically a political angle on most things realistically.
That's everything has been politicized now, even sports talk shows. Somehow there's going to be a topic about or something's going to be covered and you're going to have race is going to be brought into it somehow, or something is going to lean towards the direction of politics.
This is going to be all politicized. This is going to be considered a very left socialist point of view, and they're going to deny it based off of that.
Absolutely.
Just because of who introduced it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a big part of it. Yeah. The fact that she's the one that's putting this on the table.
Yeah.
That right there, for where she, in that room, that takes the credibility right out the window. They like, nah, we ain't rocking with her. She's too much like right.
Yeah, I think because we have so much inequity in general, people have been more outspoken in recent years of pointing said stuff out. With, you know, the government's trying to get rid of TikTok again, you know, and all that stuff, which is, say what you want about TikTok, but it is educating a whole lot of people about a whole lot of things.
Tell me, if your algorithm is set up right, you're going to see the right stuff.
You are.
Yeah, you
and,
are.
And you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I think that's part of it, too, because a lot of people are becoming educated and a lot more people are. Our country is, even though I think we're a long ways away of becoming a little bit more moderate, you know, from where we're at, I think people are waking up to the fact that we are not moderate, that we are very right wing. And because of that, you know, we're seeing the inequities that we're seeing in real time across the board, all over the place. And it's very easy to spot when you're aware of these things. I'm not going to use woke because the conservative people have
stole
that and made it mean something else. Although I still say it because it's what it is, but it's, you know, like being more aware of, and being able to highlight it and being able to have conversational points. Like, I feel like we're in a place now because of the information. Like, we can have regular conversations about this stuff with more people now than maybe we could 10 years ago because the information is a lot more easily accessible. So I hope that people are waking up to that idea. And I know that you mentioned that from an angle of everybody's talking about politics and it's annoying, and I get it. But I feel like it's kind of a good thing to a degree. That we actually have some people that are actually can legitimately bring up legitimate points to people.
Yeah, no, don't
some,
get me wrong.
Some stuff is stupid though. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong. You know, like, but you know,
yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But the problem is, it's always like you said, the face of whoever says this. So even though she is essentially a politician, pretty much going to bat for the common. Citizen that's an artist.
Right.
That we were just having a discussion about. She's trying to get artists paid. We just had a whole conversation about the bootleg era and how that changed everything. And going into this streaming era, people are not making what they're supposed to make off of music unless they are of a certain stature.
Right.
Where those streams don't really play into the how much they make, because they're able to tour and their merch sales and everything they do pretty much makes sense to their fans. Right. Whereas you have other people that are considered the artists that that not necessarily is underground, but like you were saying earlier, they can't make a living off of their music in order to, you know what I'm saying, keep on producing this art. Right. So with her coming up with this proposition for 1 cent, even though it sounds like a little bit, making a penny off every stream is actually a whole lot.
Well, that's a lot.
That's a lot, because people were making pennies on the dollar on selling a whole CD. Yeah.
True.
So it's kind of balancing the game as far as that's concerned. Being able to readily stream these songs and somebody's getting paid a penny off each time they stream it.
And
that's substantial.
And different platforms are different. Look, I've got over 50 million streams on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been paid reasonable compensation for 50 million streams
facts
on TikTok
facts,
and that would be awesome. But we, again, for looking at the creator beta program that we just got in with TikTok, they're paying us really good RPMs.
Right.
So like we have two videos that have 13,000-14,000 views, and we've made over $16 from just two videos. So it's like, It's
put it in context as far as how long that's been out, though.
It's broken. I'm guessing.
Well, those two videos.
What I'm alluding to is that, like, it's the system is broken in multiple ways, and I understand that it's complicated, but their models aren't set up to where that. I don't know, man. I feel like we talked.
What's
about
crazy
it so much.
About that too is, and we've discussed this, is they talk about how they don't make any money.
We say they, you're speaking
these like streaming Spotify platforms.
Oh, okay.
If you're not making any money, then how are you able to do this for so long?
How are you able to pay Joe Rogan $200 million?
It doesn't make any sense.
They're in partnership with the record labels.
For sure.
That's the thing that's nastiest about it. And so you are in partnership with the record labels, and then they set the rate? Come on.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
And now,
because anybody that's never made money, there's no way that you would be able to still be in business this long.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, and it goes down to sometimes you can write off your losses and stuff like that.
That's
too.
A big part of it.
You know, it's like, okay, oh, well, yeah, we didn't make this much money. But even though you generated X billion dollars.
Yeah, you talk about your operating revenue.
And that's what I was going to say, but Terry already covered it. I don't want to hear the bullshit about we don't have the money for it. That's bullshit.
Yeah, because the people that run it aren't poor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So and
if they don't have to be poor for being a part of it, then the artists who actually provide the value to your platform, where your platform wouldn't even exist without it, maybe they shouldn't be poor too.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Shout out to Ms. Tlaib. It's probably in a dark room and Lone was talking about with Caleb Williams in terms of the approval. Yeah. But shout out to her for at least bringing the conversation. You know, just approaching the conversation and putting it out there, because.
If you stream in any way, shape, or form, whether you're an artist, a comedian, where your comedy gets streamed, if you're a podcaster, this is something you should be taking and paying attention to.
Yeah. 100%.
Yep.
And I'm glad Jeff shared it, too, because I wouldn't have even seen this had he not shared it. So
yeah, I saw it DJ Plattern shared it. So shouts to him. He used to be, I think, Pink's DJ.
Yeah. Nice. Fox sent it to me.
Plattern played it Take That Tuesday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Nice. I met him when he was here.
Yep.
Yeah, Fox sent it to me. I was like, that's high key. Very valuable.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? One penny for each stream.
Yeah.
Hey, run it up.
That would definitely change the game, and piss a lot of higher ups off.
I think that's the thing too. It's like from the music streaming idea, like I would be okay if it was just reasonable. The problem is that it's just not reasonable right now.
It doesn't work.
It's just not reasonable. So it's like, and I understand they have to deal with bots, and I understand they have to deal with all this other stuff. But the reason why these things even exist in the first place is because you don't pay right.
The reason why they exist is because there's artists. You know what I'm saying? Sum up the whole night is about artists.
Yeah.
So these platforms would not exist if there weren't for artists.
Mm-hmm.
These said platforms have evolved into what they are and are running the music game. And the artists, the ones that they are pretty much pimping out, aren't making any money off of it.
Yeah.
And it just needs to be corrected.
There is no any of this without the artists.
Yeah.
None of this stuff exists without the artists.
It just means that the platforms need to adjust their advertising royalty or rates that they charge advertisers to be on their platform, or maybe they need to adjust the streaming costs. I mean, Spotify is what, like $11 a year or a month or something?
Give or something like $10 a
$10. Maybe it needs to be $20. Maybe, you know, I'm sorry.
I mean,
maybe it does. Or you need more ads.
Yeah, but you know, when I think about the fact that I used to drop $20 easily.
Every week.
Yep. For one CD.
And I get, for 20, it's not out of the range of reality.
No.
For me to pay $11 or $12 to listen to every record that has ever been available in the history of music,
man. Bro,
is really a bargain.
It's not a hard decision to make at all. Even at $20,
bro,
that's me buying a CD every other week for a month.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there were some weeks where I was buying two CDs. Mm-hmm. If you get the Best Buy sale is $9.99 that first week, I can cop two of them for $20.
Look, I'm okay with Spotify introducing ads in the middle of a song.
I'll probably upgrade and buy that extra.
Exactly.
Look, just so I don't have
that's
to hear
exactly
that.
That's exactly my point. That's exactly
but
my
that
point.
Should, but all of that should benefit the artists.
Look,
for sure.
You know what? We talked about this a few weeks ago when the whole Amazon thing, if you want to go ad free on their original content for $2.99. But you know what I did? I went and I said, okay, which one of these Amazon channels, like, you know, like, do I really want to keep playing for Paramount Plus? But this is the thing. When you unsubscribe, this is some game. When you go to unsubscribe, you know, they'll be like, hey, we'd love to keep you for.
They're going
to
offer you something.
Yeah, they're going to offer you something. You can do 99 cents for the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, that $2.99 doesn't really seem that, you know, because for my time.
Yeah.
Right.
The $2.99 is not that big of a deal based on the amount of time it would save me not having to look at somebody's commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'll take the $2.99 and buy back my time.
Yep.
Yep.
There you go.
You know, and so that's what it is really when we talk about these streaming services. I'll pay for Tidal, which is the one I have now, because I don't want to have to every three or four songs have to hear a commercial. That's time out of my day listening to something that I just don't care about.
Yep.
So,
and I don't use any of those streaming platforms. If I have to listen to a commercial, I'm not using it.
Look,
even if I pay for it, so that I'm not I use YouTube Music and Tidal, and that's it.
Yeah, just like when I got 3 months of YouTube Premium, you know, and then I realized I don't ever want to sit and watch a YouTube commercial again for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That what, $13 a month, it's worth it.
Man, it's worth it. Especially you can share it with four or five people.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, as far as watching, I haven't watched it. I remember when I went home.
It was gone.
To see, yeah, I was, because this is the thing. For my dad, this is a funny story. For my dad to have, like, basically every channel available, and when I get up, and we sat and had breakfast one morning, and the thing he was watching was police body cam videos of people shoplifting on YouTube. Hey,
it's his world.
That's his world.
And the thing is,
that's
I was like, world. Damn. And then it'd be a position in the middle where I was like, it would be a commercial, and the commercial would be like 12 minutes long. I was like, you got to get YouTube Premium. Yeah, this is not going to get it.
Yeah,
it I can't it do this.
Cool. It ain't cool at all.
But,
you need to go ahead and share him one of your profiles.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Because I'm sorry, I haven't watched a commercial on YouTube, even when I'm watching our content. Mm-mm. I was like, I don't want it busted up and have somebody trying to sell me some plumbing supplies
I don't want it.
I don't want it.
Once you cross over, it's kind of like people that say that drive Teslas.
Yeah.
They say once you come over into this Tesla life, you ain't going to want to drive a regular car.
The interesting thing about the ads stuff, though, is like if everybody bought the service, bought like the premium, the model wouldn't work.
Right.
Because it's important for the commercials ads to be played.
That is true.
Generates revenue. But
for me, it just irritates my soul.
No, that's fine. That's why I'm saying, like, realistically, putting ads in the middle of songs probably wouldn't work, because more people would buy it, and then it would mess up the whole idea.
Pay to play.
I remember when I got a car that had a heated steering wheel, and I was like, I thought that was the most unnecessary option ever. But now that I understand what it is to have a heating steering wheel in the middle of the winter, I'm never buying another car that does not have a heating steering wheel.
There you go.
Well,
that's a good place to stop it. Shout out to the chat. We appreciate y'all for sticking around with us. At his house, I see you. The Doughboy was in the building tonight. Poppy, I'm on. Meek Dog. I think B. Holcomb was in here earlier. If I missed you, I'm sorry. I apologize. I think I covered everybody.
Hatchet, no. House of Streams.
Yeah. Yep. Somebody else popped up, though, real quick.
Yeah, we had a handful of
people. Let's see. How do you say? Sean Rocker. I don't know. Is that a new one?
I think they've been in here before.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Shout out to Sean Rocker. But yeah, man, we appreciate y'all rocking with us. Like we always say, newoldheads.com for all the education you need this year. If you see it, like it, subscribe, hit the bell, notifications. Send it to some friends. Bring some friends back to the chat next time we pop out. And also, remember, go to anywhere that we have our audio show up. 5 stars. We need a nice comment. We really would appreciate that.
We need about, 7,000 more subscribers to get that 100,000 plaque.
Yeah, we need quite a bit.
I can't wait.
Quite a bit more. I haven't been super heavy on doing that, so
okay.
I'll get back to it soon.
But yeah, if you can leave us a review, we really would appreciate that. 5 stars is what we're looking for. Y'all rock with us.
Anything less than that, you just hating.
Yeah, just put it in a paragraph. Tell the truth.
Say that.
Yeah. And we'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Yep.
Yeah,
actually, we won't be here next week. So.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, but we'll see you in 2 weeks.
In two weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Peace.
Peace.